Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
And that is still a real consideration, the idea of doing that. I have no ruling.
The only way you're going to catch my ratings bonanza record-breaking show.
I have no ruling from Amanda or the powers that be about whether or not I am allowed to do that. It is technically an ESPN platform, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, I'm suggesting you never show the act.
Oh, never show the act.
You just see the smoke.
The smoke.
Or you, if you have said you'd rather do edibles.
Yes.
Now, somebody contacted me. I know nothing about this. You're a frequent user, but
yes.
Somebody wrote me a note today that said if you take edibles, you can't just take an edible at 10 o'clock and then you'd be baked by 10:30.
Right. Edibles, depending on what you take, it takes a little while to kick in. So if I took an edible at the start of the Kamenetsky show, it may not fully kick in by 11 o'clock when their show ends.
All right. So we may have to think of ways around that.
Yeah. So maybe I could send out a video of taking the edible and then, or maybe I could just take the edible and go on the show and you'll be able to tell. Trust me, I am stupid. I am stupid when I am high. All right, so, John, you only recently watched the movie The Sandlot.
On Saturday night, this past Saturday night.
It has been a blind spot in your sports...
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
...sports movie career. Yeah, I mean, I think it was, if you were of a certain age, the movie came out in 93. If you were of a certain age, it was a gigantic movie. And I, of course, see any baseball movie. I'm a sucker for baseball movies. So I saw it right away. And of course, one of the most famous line from the movie is "You're killing me, Smalls." And the man who uttered that immortal line joins us right now. Patrick Renna's on the phone. Hey, Patrick, how are you, man?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing great, Patrick, and we're happy to have you on the show. And let me start with this, Patrick. If you go back and look at pictures of young John Ireland, like 13-year-old me,
okay,
I look exactly like I do now. I mean, I look like the same guy. I just look like a mini-me. Do you have my curse? Well, that's what I was going to say. I was looking. You've got a new YouTube show we're going to talk about, and I was looking at some of the promotional stuff. And you've got that club in your bag, too, right? Do people still recognize you, even as an adult, as Ham from The Sandlot?
You know, I'd be lying if I said they didn't. Unfortunately, I can't grow a beard, so that doesn't help.
So has it been, is it something you welcome because it's such a, I don't know if you heard the prelude here. I had never seen The Sandlot. It was just a cultural blind spot for me. So when I heard you were coming on, I watched it over the weekend. So do you like it when people bring it up in 2020, so many years later, or would you rather shake it off?
You know, I do, because I feel like it opens doors, and I'm going to live with it, so might as well enjoy it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a legacy. Very few people get to be in a movie that is still relevant, 25 years later. Talk about what you remember about making that movie as a kid.
You know, it's funny. I remember so much of it now because people have constantly reminded me about the movie through the years. So the thing that strikes me the most is how much we all got along and how through the casting process they really did a great job finding guys that became brothers. And when the 25th anniversary hit, we sort of fell right back into it with each other, and we're best buds, and I think it showed through on the screen, you know?
Patrick, how old are you? You're married with children now. How old are your kids?
Well, I have a 3-year-old who just turned 3, and I have another one on the way. My wife is 40
congratulations.
Weeks on Sunday. Yeah, so due date is the 31st.
So they are, three's too young. They're unaware of your celebrity at this point, right?
Yeah, three. I showed it to him once, and he recognized me, but he quickly wanted me to change it over to Moana.
Well, okay, so Moana.
So here's a question, and I know you deal with some of this in your new YouTube show, which is called "You're Killing Me" with Patrick Renna. You talk about growing up in Hollywood, some of the things you missed out on as a young actor. Now that you have kids of your own, if they came to you and said, "Dad, I want to go into acting," would you let them or would you steer them away?
I would say absolutely when you can drive yourself, because I'll tell you what I'm not going to do is drive you throughout Hollywood to auditions until you're 16. That just sounds miserable. I already had to live through it myself. So.
Right. So your folks did that for you?
Yes. God love them, right? I mean, yeah. In this city, you know it well. It's crazy. So
now, are you a big sports fan? What's your game?
Guys, I am a huge sports fan, but I might be an even bigger Mason and Ireland fan. I just want you to know, when I saw this come through, I listen to you guys every day. So
Really?
You are my go-to. I was pretty pumped about this one.
All right, so that, first of all, thank you for that.
Yeah,
and second
thanks,
of all, we I think people would assume...
I'm just putting my plug in to play golf with you.
Yeah, anytime, man. We'll get that going. Patrick, people would assume, I think, because you played Ham in The Sandlot, that you would be a baseball fan. Is that the case, or do you like NBA or NFL, or what? If we catch you watching a sport, what is it?
NBA is my number one, probably, and MLB, right, my 1B, I would say. So it's perfect for you two, because Mason, we can talk all baseball, and Ireland, we can talk all basketball.
There you go.
It's perfect, man. Perfect. So what is your preference for how you want to see the NBA go forward? Do you like this idea of the match play, sort of the Olympic style, World Cup style? Do you like playing 1 through 16? Do you like a playoff for that 8 seed? What's your preference for how you want to see the league go forward?
I heard that 1 through 16. So basically, the Lakers play the Nets, right?
Correct.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
Because they're the 2 and 15.
Yeah, which could be, Patrick, which could be dangerous, because it's unlikely, but Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving could miraculously get better and show up for that series.
Yeah, that would be insane. I feel for Damian Lillard. I saw his post. I don't think you should make people that are out of the running get back in and potentially hurt themselves. I do think they should just kind of do a larger playoff format or something. I don't know, though. I think they could do what hockey's doing, because hockey is going to 12 total or something, right?
Right. They're bringing back 20 teams, I think. But yeah, you're right. They're expanding
I think they could bring back a few more. And just go, what is it? I guess you would have to do 20 teams total for NBA, too.
Right, because the NBA right now, under the current playoff plan, would bring in 16. So what you're talking about is adding 4 more. It would be no big deal.
I think they should do that and just start there. Maybe, obviously, do like a little preseason or whatever, do some, like ball that doesn't matter, and then get them warmed up, and then, maybe after 4 or 5 games or something, then start with 1 through 20.
So what about this baseball impasse that we've got now? We've got the owners and the players, and they're so far have not come to an agreement for baseball to return so far. Whose side are you on? Are you on the player's side or the owner's side?
I hate to go against the players. I think I'd always side with them, but I really want baseball back, because they're saying maybe June 10th, right? Spring training.
They're saying maybe June 10th, spring training, and maybe baseball back by the 4th of July.
Which would be great. I mean,
that'd be crazy.
Come on. Nothing more American than a little baseball.
You a Dodger fan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't even want to tell you guys where I'm from originally.
You're from Boston.
That's okay.
But I figured I could come clean on your guys' show. Here's the thing. I was born and raised in Boston. I left when I was 13. I moved here, and I grew up. A bunch of my friends went to Eagle Rock High, and I grew up with Shaq and Kobe. So
there
I don't know how you don't get pulled to the Lakers from 13 on. And then I grew up with the Dodgers. And, you know, Justin Turner told, I met him once, and he said his alias on the road is Ham Porter. So, I think I bleed a little Dodger blue.
All right, we're talking to Patrick Renna, actor, who many of you, I just watched The Sandlot over the weekend. If you listen to the show, you know Lindsay and Mace, basically, as soon as they heard I'd never seen it, said, you're watching it immediately or you can't continue on the show. So, Patrick, tell us about the YouTube show, You're Killing Me with Patrick Renna. If we tune into that, what are we going to see?
Well, you know, I'm doing it with some friends of mine, and I was going to launch it before all this madness happened. And basically, I interview celebrities and friends and sports players and different people like that, and put it on the channel along with, you know, just like my craziness as a father and in Hollywood and kind of, you know, living that life. And then I just decided to do it when this quarantine happened. So it's a little glimpse into my home life right now. And then when the world opens up, the show will open up with it. And I definitely will be, we'll have a sports angle to it, and it'll be sports centric and want to hit the road and do some fun stuff with that. And, but yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of like a variety show where I get to have a lot of fun and interview people and mess around.
You've got some great guests lined up. Who are some of those?
Yeah, I have. I did Ethan Suplee and Jason Doering. They already are on the channel because we filmed that before. And then I have Mike Pena, Erica Christensen, DJ Vice, who's one of the biggest DJs around. A bunch of people like that. And then, you know, I'll probably do some stuff with some sports guys and have fun.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, we'll absolutely check it out, and most of all, good luck with the new baby. And now, is your wife an actress, or does she have nothing to do with Hollywood?
No, nothing. I mean, she's just my number one, you know, partner and everything. So
good.
In that respect, she has to do with Hollywood. But
excellent.
No, she's behind the scenes. Thank God.
Cool, man. Well, listen, we appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much for listening, man. We appreciate it. And good luck with the show, You're Killing Me with Patrick Renna. It is on YouTube, and definitely go check that out. Hey, thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there's Patrick Renna. I love anybody that comes on the show and says, I listen to you every day.
We told Lindsay, quickest way to get on the show. If you're a famous person and you want to get on the show, just mention that and you're in.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. You're in.
Hey, maybe in. He could be like your celebrity golf partner. We'll have to find out how good he is.
I'm happy to play. I'll play with anybody. I played with Morales and Tommy over the weekend. Come on.
What if he's the ringer that you're looking for?
I'll take him. I fell apart like a cheap suit on the back, so I could have used him.
How is our executive vice president of promotions, Tommy Lamb, at golf?
Good.
Really?
Really good and getting better, yeah. He was probably, I only played four holes with him, but the four holes I played with him, he was dialed in. He was really good. Here's something, the challenge, if Morales and I take on Travis and Tommy, and that has been put out there and accepted, so we're going to play at some point. I think Chris and I can beat them, but, all right, so give me your opinion on this. I think the only way to beat them is if I limit Morales's drinking, but I don't want to because he's funny when he drinks.
He is funny when he drinks.
So I'm weighing on one hand Chris being funny, and on the other hand me winning. So I've got to hit that sweet spot. I've got to have him, you know, maybe save some room for cocktails after the round. If I play well and we take those guys out early, then it's a win-win because then I take Chris straight to the bar and it's all good. But so we'll see how that goes. He was pounding beers on Saturday, and he played anyway, and he seemed to be fine. So maybe, you know, we'll see.
Maybe he's superhuman.
Well, there was a lot of Coors Light that we were doing some promotional work, and Chris was actually – Chris, all the stuff you see, if you watched all the stuff we did – and we got the stats from that today. Great viewership, and we appreciate everybody checking that out. There was no faking it on Chris's part. He was actually drinking Coors Light in all of the shots you saw him with a Coors Light.
I believe it. That's the Chris Morales I know, Vice President
God
of Imaging here at the station. Yeah. All right, let's circle back to what we were talking about. By the way, John, interesting results. I put out a poll on basically who do you blame? who do you blame for the stalemate between Major League Baseball owners and players? Now, I put it out, let's see, about a half hour ago. There's 600 votes. What percentage, and I put it out there a little bit stacked. I said millionaire players, billion-dollar owners. What percentage do you think say players?
What percentage? Boy, I think, Mace, like I told Dallas Braden, I think this is swinging. I think it's less than 50%. I think it's like 30-70 in favor. I think only 30% blame the players.
It's 24% blame the players. 76% blame the owners.
But does it matter? Okay, so here's the question. Does any of that matter if we don't get baseball? I mean, won't people just be frustrated that we don't have it?
But if this is public opinion, and we should be really clear, there's been exactly one offer.
Right.
The owners made an offer to the players. The players tomorrow will make a counteroffer. We essentially know exactly what that is. We know what the counteroffer is, which
is... honor the agreement you made in March.
And play 100 games.
Yeah.
So increase the number of games and make it a pro rata share. That way the owners can make up some more of that revenue. To me, that's a reasonable proposal. But I think public opinion matters. And it may be that this is the first time we see fans actually supporting players in this situation. Because honestly, if you play 82 games, you should get 82 games worth of your salary. That is a very, very reasonable position. That's exactly what the NFL is going to do with their players, whether they have fans or not. They could take a revenue hit. Those players are still going to get paid every dime. NBA players getting a pro rata share for games that they played. They're not getting paid for the games they miss. They're getting paid for the games they play. To me, the player's position, play us per game, exactly what you owe us, is a very reasonable position. But if you take the other side, if you believe the players are being greedy, regardless of what side, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-ESPN, I'm curious about this because at least in a small sample size, people seem to be blaming the owners for the stalemate that we're at right now. We'll get some of your phone calls in here next. And at the bottom of the hour, Bobby Marks is going to join us. We'll swing back to some NBA and some possible solutions. Also, Mark Lazary, from the who's one of the owners in the NBA, he owns the Milwaukee Bucks, was on CNBC today with some interesting comments. We'll get those for you coming up after 4:30 also, after the bottom of the hour, after 4:30, whatever. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. By the way, it is National Hamburger Day, John.
Really?
Where is your favorite burger?
Where is my favorite burger? Well,
I know where you get them the most, but that doesn't make it your favorite.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing you get them the most at Islands.
No, but Jack does. My son does.
Okay.
I get the most because there's one near me from Five Guys.
Five Guys is good.
There's also a place called The Habit near me that has really good burgers. But so I would probably answer that Five Guys, but I don't know if that's just they're a winner by geography. You know what I mean? Because I have
right.
one like 2 miles from my house.
Where do you go? For me, I think my favorite burger in L.A. is Father's Office, which is over in Culver City. Fantastic burger. And my favorite burger in Southern California altogether is a place called Tyler's, which is in downtown Palm Springs. That is an unbelievable burger. That is my favorite burger in the world. If you are ever in Palm Springs, downtown Palm Springs, completely unsolicited, the best burger I have ever had anywhere.
Okay, so there's a place like that in Manhattan Beach called Hercules that if you're looking for that, if you're looking for like, you want to have a hamburger that would be like the best ones you've ever had in your life,
yep.
You go to Hercules. But it's not right next to my house like Five Guys is. So that's why I would say Five Guys.
Yeah. Lindsay, what about you?
I would say locally, The Counter is my favorite burger. They have a great Impossible Burger. I also am a big fan of Carl's Jr. because their Beyond Burger is fantastic. And then like my favorite burger of all time is Fuddruckers, which I used to have all the time in Hilton Head.
Is Fuddruckers still around?
I don't know. I know that there's a couple of them I think that are still around, but like the one in Columbus closed. There's a couple other that I tried going to that were no longer there. So
there's a couple in IE.
Oh, yeah.
Me and the Empire. Okay. Hey, let's get to this call on line two from Enrique in East L.A. He wants to talk about this baseball thing. Hey, Enrique, you're on 710 ESPN. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. You guys are all wrong. The answer's in and out, in and out, in and out.
Oh, that's a good suggestion.
In and out. It's a legend. It's a legend.
All right. So, Enrique, are you a baseball fan?
Yeah, I'm a baseball fan, and I think the players are being a bit greedy. I really do. I know you don't usually take the first offer at a negotiation table, but this is a chance for them to really take the spotlight, and I think they're not stepping up. They all make a ton of money. They're the one sport that doesn't have a real cap. I get that they're going to play a lot of games, but I feel like this is their opportunity to shine, and they're just kind of whining about it.
Let me ask you something, Enrique. When you work 10 days, do you expect 10 days worth of pay?
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time,
isn't that exactly what baseball players are asking for?
Well, and this is kind of my point. Like right now, this is a very different time for most people. I'm working well over my 40 hours a week. I'm not really getting compensated too much, but I am thankful for the opportunity to be working.
Right.
Enrique, let me come at this from a different angle and see if it makes sense, or at least see if you agree with it. All right, let's reverse the situation and say that I'm an owner and you're a player, and I agree to pay you, we sign a contract, and I agree to pay you $5 million in 2020. So the pandemic hits, I'm not making any money, I have no gate receipts, I come to you and say, hey, Enrique, I can't pay you because we've had this thing that nobody expected happen. Instead of giving you $5 million, I'll give you $1 million. All right? And you can help me get through the pandemic by taking less money. And even if you agreed to do that, let's go to 2021. Let's say I have a banner year, that the reaction to baseball being away is that everybody comes back. All the values double. I can charge more money for tickets, more money for TV rights. I make a fortune. But you and I agreed I only get you $5 million. Do you think I'm going to turn around and pay you $10
million? No, no.
So why should you take $1 million? In other words, I'm not giving you more of the profits when I have a good year. Why am I asking you to take less when I have a bad year? I'm the owner. That's the risk I'm taking.
That's the difference. They're the owners. We're not. It's not a profit-sharing system that I'm...
Right.
So what's the point, you know? I understand what you're saying, but I think at the end of the day, the owners are still going to take a bit of a loss here. They have no revenue coming from the gates.
Right.
So I get that. They have no revenue coming from the beer, the merch sales. Probably.
But their franchises have increased in value four times over last decade.
Enrique, if you want to pay me $1 million when we agreed to five, I'll do it as long as I can participate in that franchise valuation. That when you make way more money next year than I get a piece of that, I guarantee you the owners won't go for it. I don't understand why the gate doesn't swing both ways.
But I don't know a sport that the gate does swing both ways. I don't know a lot of industry.
Nobody in the NFL's taking a cut.
Yeah, nobody in the NFL's taking a cut, whether they're fans or not.
But don't the NFL, I mean, the NFL's wildly more popular than the MLB, and there's way less players. I mean, actually, that's not true, but...
No, that's not true, actually.
There's a few more, but...
There's a few more players.
Pretty close, right?
NBA players aren't taking a bite. They're getting paid on a per-game basis. They're being paid a pro rata share of what they would make during the year.
But Enrique,
I don't understand why baseball's different.
But Enrique, I am very interested that you think this, that there are people out there that just say the players are being greedy. Because Mason and I are rarely on the same side of anything, but we've come around to the same side on this. And does it matter to you, Enrique, that the players are taking all the medical risks? That if anybody gets COVID, it's not going to be an owner. It's probably going to be a player.
That's a good point. I mean, that's definitely a good point. I didn't think about that. I think my stance on this is specific to baseball. If this was NFL, NBA, I think there's a different thing there. I think the NFL has inherent... You play in the NFL, you have inherent health risks no matter what. Anytime you go out there, those guys don't seem to matter.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. Enrique, thank you for calling in. Most of all, thank you for mentioning In-N-Out, because In-N-Out is a Lakers sponsor, and I want to make sure they get a little love. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, man, that's usually your promo, John. So I had
Michael. I just don't have an In-N-Out right next to me, but I love In-N-Out. They're really good.
Thanks, man. By the way, the In-N-Out up the street for me, probably got to wait an hour and a half.
There's one in Hawthorne like that always has a line. Yeah.
All right, coming up next for you, Bobby Marks is going to join us. We will chew on all these various scenarios for the NBA's return with him, ESPN basketball analyst. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. What is going on? We covered a lot of ground today, a lot of ground. We talked, Dallas Braden was fantastic on the show. Patrick Renna, great on the show. You're killing me, Smalls. We're going to shift back to some NBA right now. We've talked about the various, plans and the different incarnations that potentially, could come back for the, NBA this summer. Heard some, roundabout dates. I'm sorry, is Bobby on the line?
Yes.
Oh, we've got him. Okay, good. Joining us right now is ESPN NBA analyst Bobby Marks. Bobby, how are you, man?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
Great, Bobby, and good to hear from you. You've heard all these plans. We've been kind of debating them all. I'm kind of sitting from the perspective of I'll take NBA basketball any way I can get it. I would take any of the plans, but I know you've looked them over. What do you think is the most likely scenario if and when the NBA returns?
I mean, I think probably the most likely is that there is a we take the 16 teams and that was in the playoffs in mid-March, and then we do some type of play-in type scenario where it's those bubble teams, I guess, in the Western Conference, you know, San Antonio, Portland, New Orleans, and Sacramento, and you know they're competing for probably the last two playoff spots. I think that the challenge for that is then what are we doing with the rest of the seeding? You know, are we going to a one to 16 based on, you know, record, and we mix East and West, because then it gets a little bit complicated, because if you have, you know, Portland and, you know, New Orleans now replacing Brooklyn or Orlando, that changes the scope a little bit. I personally think we should just take the 16 teams that we finished with in mid-March. And those are your playoff teams, and either it's Eastern versus West, or we reseed it. We can, you know, do either. I just think there's so much unknown here, and, you know, especially going to Orlando, playing games again, to open it up, bring 20 or 24 teams, I just think it sets you up for, you know, the risk, which is already higher. I think it probably takes it to a different level.
What do you think of the World Cup style scenario where there are groupings and then those groups each play each other twice and then the two best teams advance? Do you think that has any legs?
I think it does. I don't think if I am Milwaukee and the two LA teams, I'm not sure if that's what I want. I don't, you know, I think I would rather, you know, go into a series instead of an individual one game, you know, mini series here, or play, you know, each team, you know, twice, and it comes out to, I guess, maybe 8 or 10 games here, and you take the two teams in each group, and those go to, I guess, to the Elite Eight. I think if I'm the Lakers and the Clippers, I want to go, you know, I want best of seven, because I know I'm the better team who I will be facing, at least in round one, compared to, you know, if you get off to a, you know, if you go 1-2 and you know, then you're really behind the eight ball, and you're up, you know, hill as far as if you can get it to the next round. So I think it does have legs, just because you look at it from the amount of money that's been lost already from a TV standpoint. If you can get an additional, I guess, 120 games potentially, and I know some of that would be playoff type games, but to kind of dip into that local TV money, I think it does. You know, I think it has legs from an economic standpoint. I think it has legs because you basically would involve 24 out of 30 teams. So I think that's one. You know, that's certainly a scenario that's going to be thrown about.
Bobby Marks is with us, ESPN NBA insider. For those of you who don't know, Bobby used to be the assistant GM of the Brooklyn Nets. And Bobby, if they did go to a 1-16 format where they just seeded everybody based on record, the Lakers and Nets would meet in the first round. That's led to speculation that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving could decide, oh, we can play against the Lakers in the playoffs. We're in. Do you buy that speculation that Durant and Kyrie would magically get better and play?
I think it's fascinating. I don't buy it. I mean, I look at it that, you know, we stopped in mid-March. Yes, Kevin and Kyrie were able to, you know, have the Nets, you know, training staff to be able to go through rehab. I think from what I know, both guys did not stay local. So if Kevin was out in your area there, and you're still, I know he's a year removed from the surgery, but it's basically his rehab was postponed a couple months here. And although he did things, he wasn't on the court playing 5-on-5 against teammates. So it's hard for me to believe that, you know, that Brooklyn is going to allow either player to kind of go through a 2 to 3 week mini camp when basketball wise, they haven't probably done much, and then basically kind of throw them into the gauntlet and face that Laker team in a 2-15 matchup.
So, Bobby, I personally love the 1 through 16 as a Lakers fan because it would put Milwaukee and the Clippers on one side of the bracket and the Lakers on the other side of the bracket, and they wouldn't have to face either the Clippers or Milwaukee until a potential NBA Finals. Do you think they're leaning towards traditional conferences, or do you think they're leaning towards 1 through 16?
Well, I think the 1 through 16 was always something that the league had. I know that the league has talked about, and it was always about travel, right? I mean, how do you get, you know, in this case, a 2:50, a Laker Brooklyn series, and then you have both teams kind of crisscrossing across, you know, the coast. I think if there is an opportunity to do it, even if it's just a one off and it's just year, here is your year. But of course, you've got to get the majority of, you know, the Board of Governors to kind of vote on it. But I think if you kind of put it out there that it's just a one-time thing and this is not going to be in 2021, then I do think you'd get some support. And you're right. I mean, if you look at the brackets that we, you know, that were out there, you know, the top brackets, like the group of death. I mean, you get, you know, Milwaukee, you get the Clips, you get Boston in there, I think Miami and OKC, and then where LA is, yeah, you get the Houston, Utah winner, but you have, you know, teams like Toronto and Denver, which, you know, certainly are not pushovers, but I would rather take my chance against those teams. So I think it's something that will be talked about tomorrow, probably one of three or four scenarios that the commissioner will pitch to the owners. Do I think it will happen? Unlikely, unless we do expand it to add four teams in a play-in scenario. And I think, as I said before, I think then you'll have to, because the balance of conferences will be, you might have 10 East, 10 Western Conference teams and 6 Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah, which would be weird. We're talking to Bobby Marks from ESPN, the NBA Insider. Bobby, something that we haven't brought up at all, because we've been focused specifically on trying to get the NBA back on the court to finish the 2020 season. If they do this, in whatever form it takes, we've talked about 3 or 4 different ones. Let's say they do it. They crown a champion in August. The draft moves to September. Do you then assume that the next season, the 2021 season, starts around Christmas time, or do they try and get back on their old NBA calendar?
No, I've assumed that it's going to be Christmas, even if there was no season. If the commissioner
really
tomorrow says, you know what, we're not going to play, and which is, you know, I don't think is going to happen. I just look at it that, when you look at pushing it to December from an economic standpoint, it gives you more time, probably 2 more months, to potentially get more fans in the seats. You know, maybe by then there'll be a vaccine in place here. So I've always thought that December was the more realistic scenario if we were playing basketball in July and August, or we were kind of sitting at home.
Do you have a sense for dates? I mean, there's floating around the idea of a June 21st training camp and a July 23rd or 25th opening. Does that feel about right, what you expect?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like phases, how Major League Baseball, I guess, had rolled it out, as far as if certainly phase one is getting, you know, increasing as many players that you can get on the court for workouts. And then we kind of get to that phase two where you're bringing back that whole team. And then that phase three is more of a training camp setting. And yeah, I mean, we're about to get into June here. I would think that we would start games no later than the end of July. And that would probably take you into, I guess, sometime in mid-September when we're playing finals. And I've always thought that, you know, free agency potentially could start October 1st. Either we have the draft late September, or maybe we have the draft in early October. I mean, there's a big push from teams to have the draft after free agency starts, which would be kind of a unique twist here. And then we get going, you know, for a season around, around Christmas time. It hurts teams that, you know, that do get to a finals because your time off is shortened. But, you know, we've been off for three months already here.
Right. All right, Bobby, last thing for me. If they figure out a way to do this, to complete the 2020 season with one of these playoff formats we've been talking about, in your opinion, who wins it?
Oh, it's going to be the survival of the fittest, right? It's almost like Survivor. Who can survive, I guess, on the island of Disney?
I mean,
I think who wins it, is going to be depend on what guys have been doing the last couple months. I think that's going to be who's going to have to play catch up when we get to mid-June from a conditioning standpoint. I think these guys will figure it out from a basketball standpoint. But if you've got guys that it's going to take them months and not weeks to get into some type of game shape, I think that will hurt teams. So I think, you know, I think when you look at the, you know, when we're walking into two LA teams, I mean, I think you could probably put all three in a hat and kind of pick it out of there.
All right. Hey, listen, Bobby, thank you very much for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. There's Bobby Marks. It sounds like it's a kind of toss-up between 1 through 16 and traditional conferences.
And he even gave the World Cup proposal a chance.
Yeah.
Say that, you know, that would be a long-shot possibility.
Woj says that call is going to happen tomorrow, but don't expect any decision or firm plan until the end of next week.
Matter of fact, I think he tweeted earlier that Adam Silver told the GMs today. This is Woj's reporting. I'm not throwing this out
right,
just out of thin air. Woj reported that there will not be a vote or an announcement on a playoff plan tomorrow, that they will talk through the weekend at least. So don't expect any announcement tomorrow, even though they have a Board of Governors call. That Woj is reporting the plan is not to come up with a solution tomorrow. And you know, when we're doing Mason in Ireland tomorrow afternoon for us to reveal a full plan, it's not happening.
Although stuff will leak out.
Right. But
maybe not a final decision. But stuff will leak out.
According to Woj, they're not taking a vote.
Yeah, no vote. But don't you think we'll start to hear from insiders? Yeah, the owners really like this one. The owners really don't like that one.
Maybe,
play,
but why
it's not?
Why haven't we been hearing what GMs liked today?
It's a fair point. Fair point. Although owners are talking. Mark Lazary, owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, was on CNBC today.
What he said?
We'll play it for you next. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. 5 o'clock Fast Track is coming up for you.
Yeah.
I got a round of Mystery Voice in 5 o'clock.
Lindsay had a very good day yesterday.
Yeah, we'll see if Lindsay's winning streak.
She won every game we played.
Yeah, she is catching on to all of our
including
games.
She even won Sliwa's game, which is always
crazy.
Very difficult.
She had some help there, but yes. All right,
always
so
difficult.
Mark Lazary is the owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, and for some reason, whatever he does, he winds up on CNBC a lot. Do we know what he does?
Yeah, he's a finance guy.
Okay,
him and Wes Edens, the other co-owner, both come from finance.
So Lazary gave us a preview of what will happen at tomorrow's Board of Governors meeting on CNBC today.
Yeah, we had an advisory board meeting yesterday, and then today there's going to be a call with the general managers and the presidents of the organizations. Then tomorrow we have the Board of Governors. I think what will happen to it tomorrow is Adam's going to recommend to the board the different options that we're going to have about reopening. And I think as a board, we'll think about it and over the weekend, and then hopefully have another meeting early next week to vote on sort of what we all feel will be the reopening of the NBA.
What's the most likely?
So he's thinking early next week. Here he is with some dates.
I don't know yet. I'll find out tomorrow. I mean, we'll hear sort of the recommendations from Adam. Look, I think at the end of the day, we'll be in Orlando at Disney. And, you know, the question is going to be, will we have all 30 teams there? Will we have 24? Whatever the number will end up being. But I think hopefully by the middle of July, we start playing again.
All right, so Mace, here's a hard
middle of July.
Yeah, here's a hard question. one of the things that the Lakers and the Bucks have earned by being the number one seeds in their respective conferences is home court throughout the playoffs. That has now been taken away, obviously, by the pandemic. It's been taken away by, all the top four seeds who thought they were going to have home games are not going to have that opportunity now. Do you, if you're the NBA, even open that box to try and compensate them either competitively or financially for losing their home court? Do you try anything or you just say, nope, that's the world we live in?
Well, tell me what you would do. I'm trying to think what you would actually do.
Competitively, maybe. Oh, well, let me start with financially. These games are going to do monster ratings.
Yes.
The local TV providers are going to be able to do the games. The national TV provider, every NBA playoff game is televised.
Yes.
Would you give the team that should have had home court? So let's use Milwaukee as an example. Milwaukee has a first-round playoff game against Orlando. Normally, you would split the revenue brought in by the national broad. You know, they pay a big rights fee, TNT does, and they split it evenly between all 30 teams. Would you give Milwaukee a little more money because they earned home court and never got to receive it? So, in other words, you would tip the scales towards the Bucks because they got screwed out of home court.
But just not only tip them financially, not tip them competitively.
Well, competitively is where it gets tricky.
Yeah, I mean, so, competitively would be, I mean, that just sounds like an owner thing. We want more money.
The only way you could do it competitively is, for example, if you did the World Cup option, you could give the top seeds a bye. You could be more competitive. You know, somebody, we had a caller earlier say, give the, you know, like in the NFL, if you finish first in your conference in the NFL, you don't have to play the first weekend of the playoffs. Now, I'm not crazy about that because I want to see Giannis and LeBron play as much as possible.
Right.
But,
so in other words, not a bye.
They did earn, no, I'm saying, do you consider giving them a bye or maybe even the top two teams a bye because they didn't get home court? Do you even bring it up?
No, I would not. And by the way, I don't know that a bye would be an advantage. A bye might be a disadvantage. This is one of the things we've
talked
about.
Do you think it's an advantage in the NFL?
Sometimes and sometimes not. Sometimes not. Sometimes teams get
rusty. Who did? Who did? Not Baltimore. Tennessee beat somebody this year. Did Tennessee beat Baltimore? Right.
Yeah.
Baltimore had a bye, and Tennessee beat them.
Look at the number of times a wild card team has stoked out of that wild card game and run all the way to the World Series and even won it. That's why, for example, in baseball, they're talking. They're planning to add a playoff team so that you will have 9-10 teams in each conference or in each league with the number one overall record having a bye. And we talked to, I'm trying to remember who we talked to, who said they thought that would be a disadvantage.
Okay, so your answer to my question is nothing. You get nothing for getting the number one seed other than you get to play the eight.
Yes, I think that's, I believe that that's, and I've not heard anybody else describe this. The financial part seems like an owner thing that they would just work out amongst themselves.
Right.
That doesn't have anything to do with what goes on competitively.
Well,
I don't think a buy would be a competitive advantage.
I'm just saying when you, like, let's say that we didn't have the pandemic.
Right.
For a home game, you make like $1 million because you get to keep the gate, you get to sell merchandise, you get parking, you get food. You're not getting any of that, even though the Lakers and the Bucks earned it. You know what I'm saying? But, I think that you just have to say it's a pandemic. Nobody could foresee it. We're all playing in one spot, so that's it.
Right, and unless you're going to compensate every team for their seeding, it doesn't seem right that you would just do it for the number one overall seeds.
No. Well, you could do it. You could give the number one overall seeds the biggest portion of the pie. Second place, second seed gets the second biggest. Third, you know, you divide it based on record that you would get
right,
a little more.
Right.
I just don't know if you even address the issue. If you even say, all right, you guys are all getting screwed out of a lot of money because you don't get any home games. Let's do something to address it. My guess is they don't.
Yeah, my guess is that's probably not.
But I wouldn't be shocked if they did. If it came, if you know, when Adam Silver announced next week, he said, "All right, in order to reward these teams for having great seasons, we're doing X." I just don't know what X would be.
I just think that vote would be 28-2.
Only if you rewarded the number one seeds.
Correct.
Only.
If you ordered the if you gave the number one seeds at a more money.
What if you just did it? What if you did it like you tilt lottery odds? Like the number one seeds would get. Let's say 17% of the revenue. The number two seeds would get 15%. The number three seeds get 12. The number four seeds get 10. All the way down to the number eight, who gets the smallest amount. That seems fair, but I don't think they're going to do it.
Doesn't the NBA have total revenue sharing?
It depends on what it is. Not for, like, for a home game. Let's say, like, you have a home playoff game. You get to keep a lot of the stuff. You don't share parking revenue from a home game with other teams.
Oh, okay, got it. So you share TV money overall, but you don't share your local stuff.
I think that, you do some. Like the Lakers, because they have the biggest TV deal, have to cut a check. There is limited revenue sharing, but there are some things you get to keep.
Okay, got it. I'm guessing that probably is too in the weeds and not something that they're going to deal with. I mean,
I agree.
There are bigger, broader issues with bringing the game back that probably are going to be the main focus.
Well, people are going to have to make compromises, and there's going to be some people that are unhappy with wherever they end up.
Yeah,
we've been spending the whole show talking about these. We've narrowed it down to four proposals. There are probably four more we haven't even brought up, and in each one of those proposals, somebody's probably going to be unhappy.
Yep.
So you just got to get ready for that.
All right. Coming up next for you is 5 o'clock Fast Track, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.